You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We are continuing our conversation with Benjamin Clogy today as we take a look at portraits in American Lutheran sacred music. Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University Chicago. You can learn more about Concordia University Chicago by visiting cuchicago.edu. Joining us today, Benjamin Clogy, church organist and musicologist and author of Portraits in American Lutheran Sacred Music, 1847 to 1947, from Concordia Publishing House. Benjamin, welcome back to the Coffee Hour.
Thanks for having me, Andy and Sarah.
Today, we get to take a look at C.F.W. Walther. He's as a church musician. Many of us know him as a pastor, with the founder, one of the founders of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. A lot of history here at the LCMS International Center, including a statue one floor below us here in the lobby of the International Center. We could see him from the studio. So lots of history with Walther, but there's some history about Walther that we may not know as much. And so Benjamin's going to share that with us today. Let's talk about his formation. What do we know about C.F.W. Walther's formation as a pastor, as a church musician?
I found that this was one of the most interesting topics that I got to delve into in the book, because we all know of Walther as a pastor and as administrator and a church leader who essentially led these Lutherans from Germany to America in some really harsh circumstances, both socially and politically and just in terms of immigration. We all know him like that, but we don't know him as a musician. And so I was really excited to explore that. And I'm not the only one who has. I don't want to claim credit for that. John Vicker has written about Walther as a musician too, but I just expanded a bit upon what he had already found. But the books of Walther's life don't mention him much as a musician. I think it kind of goes to show that musicians are a little bit suspect, and it's better just to focus on the tried and true Walther as a theologian. But Walther in his early life, and he went to teacher's college, of course, trained as a pastor, but trained as a teacher. So he was trained in organ, piano, presumably violin, singing all the basic rudiments in music. In fact, he wrote early on, quote, "I feel that I was born for nothing but music." Yeah, we all have that feeling sometimes too, but then reality sets in. And so his father actually discouraged his career, and he warned him, "If you wish to become a musician, you will have to do it yourself. But if you'll study theology, I'll give you $1 a week. So he was basically bribed into studying theology, which, of course, was quite successful. And we got a great theologian out of that. But we do lose the nuance of Walther as a musician. Of course, all of those Lutherans in Prussia, in Saxony, were singing. They were singing people. And his brother, Otto, who died shortly after, Otto was really much the leader early on. He actually wrote a book of songs to encourage them to immigrate to the United States, which wasn't unusual. Many Lutheran pastors wrote songs of immigration to the United States. Jan Killian did here in Texas as well. But they were a musical family. They were a poetic family. And so Walther was trained as a musician as well as a theologian. He had a facility in piano, organ, and violin.
Tell us about Walther as a composer.
Right. So in 1860, I suppose that he got a little bit tired and he took a sabbatical to Germany. And on the way, I suppose he sailed down the Mississippi, got to the Gulf of Mexico, or America, I'm not sure what it is these days, to the Gulf. He got to the Gulf, and he decided that would inspire him to compose some hymns, not only the texts, but the tunes as well. And the only one that we have, sort of, is Lutheran Service Book 480. He's risen, he's risen. He's risen, he's risen, Christ Jesus the Lord. He opens this prison, the incontroverted. And he wrote three other hymns that I analyze and I talk about in my book. They're not in our hymnal. And in fact, this hymn, the hymns are interesting because he wrote not only the text, which we would expect from a great theologian, but he wrote the tunes too. And I analyze the tunes in my book. They're very jaunty, fun little tunes. In fact, this one was originally in 3-4, they're almost like waltzes. They kind of dum-dum-dum-dum. That's in 4-4. It's not a waltz, but originally he conceived of some of these as waltzes. And it makes me think that his hymns were not meant to be sung in church, but were meant to contribute to Lutheran folk music, which we don't really have much anymore, but there was a genre of that. You know, like Schubert's Lieder, this would be something akin to that, that you would maybe sing at home in the house, a lovely little tune with a very strong text. But Walter was quite the musician. In my book, I found some quotations of people who heard him play. And so I have some here of him at the organ. One fellow, Reverend Carl Eisfeld, he remembered, quote, unquote. Now remember, at this time, well, you don't remember because we're not that old. But as you recall, St. Louis had the four churches, the Gesamtgemeinde, the four churches of which Holy Cross and Trinity were two. And so the seminary was right across the street from Holy Cross. It's not there, obviously, anymore, but Walter was kind of based there, so he played a lot at Trinity. Another fellow recalled that Walter, quote, acted as organist in the church nearest the seminary. Then the students who had missed being present were always very put out at not having known that he was to play. Another, his name is Theo Bunger. He was a student of Walter's. He remembered, quote, on high festivals, when he was not preaching, he would take to the organ bench, and worshipers in Holy Cross Church had no need to look up who was playing when he sounded the prelude. And awake my heart with gladness, pealed forth Easter joy. Another, his name is William Dahlman, he recalled that Walter, he says, it was easy to listen to him and also to his masterly playing of the organ at Holy Cross Church. It seems that he played mostly at Holy Cross. And there's another quotation from a fellow named J.L. Gruber. I don't know much about him other than he seemed to be some sort of antagonist of Walter. He wasn't a supporter. So he wrote this. At the request of the congregation, if he was not required to be elsewhere, Walter would play the organ on Sunday in Trinity Church, at which time he had nothing in front of him except the chorale. He means no music. For his postludes, he selected a short, simple theme, which he treated fugally in all possible keys with the organ. The modulations, which followed closely upon each other, and the transitions bestowed upon his playing a hard, powerfully loud, and bizarre character. He ignored the swell pedal as a matter of principle. This is kind of funny because it's not really praise. You don't praise someone's playing by calling it bizarre. But this fellow was not particularly a friend. But it does not seem that Walter was a timid organist. Another says this, a Furbinger, Ludwig. He said, it is well known that Walter was an excellent musician and at one time in his youth had even thought of following a musical career. In my student days, Walter was often, almost regularly, playing the organ in Holy Cross Church for the sermon hymn to be sung by the congregation. The organ at that time was a rather poor instrument, but Walter certainly knew how to make the best of it. He played without notes, again, without music, entered into the specific character of the hymn so that everyone was impressed not only by his preludes and interludes, but especially by leading the congregation to sing the chorale as it should be sung. So I really had no idea that Walter seemed to be such a virtuoso instrument. He could improvise. He did not play in a timid fashion. And this last quote, he talked about leading the chorale as it should be sung. Walter was a fierce advocate for singing the metrical versions of the tunes. A mighty fortress is our God, as opposed to a mighty fortress is our God. Walter surely led with a lot of confidence and no nonsense when it came to singing, playing these rhythmic chorales. I think Walter was an amazing musician. I would have loved to have heard him play the organ.
He was an amazing church musician in leading the church's song and composing as well. In what other ways did he serve as a church musician?
Interestingly, at the Concordia Historical Institute there in St. Louis, there is the service bulletins for the dedication of Trinity St. Louis in 1865. And the complete service is there with the hymns printed out, And we also get the motets, the choral anthems, I guess we would say, but the motets that the choir sang. And they were by Haydn and Mozart. And we know that that Walther was an enthusiastic conductor. He gathered choirs together. There's one quotation I found in the book of a singer under Walther who says, "Walther was just as pleasant and patient and at the same time painfully accurate. And he unconditionally rehearsed certain passages so long until they could be reproduced correctly according to his educated judgment and elegant taste." And that was in the reference to leading a choir rehearsal. So Walther really liked the music of Haydn and Mozart. He engaged in leading this music and even chose this music for the dedication at a Trinity in St. Louis. And in this book, I was fascinated. I shouldn't have been, as I think about it now, but Walther made a little mention of Bach. We recently had Bach Week last month, and we talked about how important Bach was for the Lutheran Church, but not so much for Walther. You don't see Bach at the dedication of Trinity, for example, because the Bach revival didn't happen until Walther had pretty much had left Leipzig. He left in 1839. And so Bach, and by the time Walther came to America, you kind of get cut off from cultural trends. So I think that he just was not as familiar with Bach as, say, the next generation of Lutheran teachers and musicians was after him. So you won't see a lot of Bach, but he did favor Mozart and Haydn.
We have more to learn about C.F.W. Walther and his life as a church musician with Benjamin Kolodgy. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago. I'm thrilled to announce the Prepared to Serve Church Professional Guarantee. Any new student in one of CUC's six church work programs will pay no more than $5,000 in annual tuition and required fees guaranteed. Prepared to Serve is a donor-funded initiative. Support future church work students by becoming a funding partner at cuchicago.edu/preparedtoserve. Concordia University Chicago. With Christ at the center, we stand tall for the church.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
We're talking with Benjamin Kolodgy, church organist and musicologist, on Portraits in American Lutheran Sacred Music, 1847 to 1947, available from CPH. And we are talking about C.F.W. Walther as a musician. I love learning all of this. We learned so much of his history as a leader in our church and as a pastor, and maybe some of his personal life, but not a lot about him as a musician. So this is really fun to listen to your stories about C.F.W. Walther as a musician. Now, what else was he involved in? I hear organ design was something that he did.
Right. So in my book, I talk about the design of the first organ at Trinity St. Louis, Trinity Soulard now. And most certainly, Walther designed this himself. It was a local builder who built it. I talk in great detail in the book about it. It's probably not of interest here, but it was the largest organ in the LCMS. It was the most important organ in the LCMS. Walther played it all the time. And LCMS churches in St. Louis and well beyond copied this organ. And it was so important to Missouri Synod Lutheraners. It was built by a fellow named Pfeffer, local to St. Louis. And Walther wanted it to represent the sounds that he heard in German organs in Saxony. And so this organ is a little bit different, quite a bit different than the American organs being built in the 1860s. I go into the details in my book. It's probably not that interesting if you're not an organist. So if you're not an organist, you can just skip that part and I won't be offended. But Walther was greatly involved in this organ, and it kind of set organ design for the next couple of decades in the Missouri Synod. But, you know, talking about Walther as a musician, he also had a pietist streak in that he, like many pastors at the time, were kind of skeptical toward the misuse of music. And I have a story in the book that I think is kind of is telling about Walter and his whole approach toward non-sacred music. There was a student and an opera company had come to St. Louis, and they were going to perform Meyerbeer's Les Huguenots. And these two students really wanted to go downtown to hear this, but they thought that they should solicit Walter's opinion. So the student writes in his journal, he writes this: "I laid the whole matter before Walter, eagerly awaiting his answer. When I had ended, he said, 'Don't you believe that I also should like to attend? I know that the only reason why you are anxious to go is the opportunity to hear that wonderful music, and I don't blame you in the least. But you may also be sure that quite a number of our younger congregation members will be there. Also, those who make no distinction between things permitted and prohibited. How would you feel if these people would see you there and from your presence draw the conclusion, if a future pastor comes here, then we may visit any show? Would that be a matter of indifference to you?' So after Walter had spoken in this manner for some time, he closed with a remark, 'I will not forbid you to go. Do whatever you think you can answer for to God.' And so the students decided to spend the evening at the seminary. But I think this shows that this may be one reason why Walter has not been explored as a musician, because it was a part of him that he cultivated very carefully. He also wrote a number of treatises against dancing, which now we would find kind of humorous and maybe not take it too seriously, which kind of shows the difference, how culture has developed, not necessarily in a good way, but how things have developed. So Walter was, in a way, a pietist. He was a bit concerned about how music could be taken too far. Even though he loved this opera, he thought, you know, if it's opera first, then it's musical theater, then it's dancing, and what comes after that? And it was a slippery slope. And I think we can understand his logic there. But that may be why he himself downplayed his own vocation as a musician.
Walter certainly was a huge impact on the seminary here in St. Louis, the growth of the seminary, the congregations here in St. Louis as well, and the development of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Did he have any connection to or visit frequently Addison Seminary in Northern Illinois? Do we know anything about that?
Yeah, not that I'm aware of. When Walter died in the late 1880s, you know, the seminary had only been around about 24 years. So I don't know, other than to say that the Addison professors were clearly in agreement completely with how Walter promoted liturgics. So how he wanted the hymns to be sung. I suspect that the professor, particularly Brower, there was a lot of back and forth between St. Louis and Addison, so that Addison was teaching exactly what Walter wanted them to teach liturgically, hymnologically, so that everybody could sing the same thing uniformly. So that, as I mentioned in an earlier show, the quote from Karl Brower, where he wanted everybody to sing in Omaha, in Baltimore, and Chicago, they all sing the chorales the same way. Well, that was very important to Walter too. And the Addison Seminary did a pretty good job of purveying that. That is to say, I don't want to put too many caveats on things, but as the years go by, the Addison Seminary, the church, for one thing, the Missouri Synod was growing, congregations were growing. They needed more pastors, they needed more teachers, and the Addison Seminary was woefully unprepared to teach these increasingly large number of students. So by the 1880s and 90s, things are kind of going downhill in terms of pedagogy, and they occasionally needed a shot in the arm. They got a new organ in the late 1880s, which kind of helped them. But sometimes it was a pretty primitive teaching condition. I think that there was oftentimes, there was a story of the students having to play for devotions in the morning. I guess we would call it chapel, but they would call it devotions, just reading and a hymn. And apparently, even into the 20th century, there were some students that just still, despite their years of organ playing, could not do it. And it was just taxing on people's ears. So Although we want to say that the Addison Seminary set a great, and Walter himself set a great precedent for teaching and how organists should play, it wasn't always uniformly applied.
Where do we see the influence of C.F.W. Walther on American Lutheran sacred music today?
I think the easy answer to that is in the rhythmic chorales. If you look in the non-LCMS hymnals, you will find, well, number one, you will find many fewer of the German chorales. And then when you do find them, they are less likely to be the rhythmic forms of them. And in the early 1840s, Walther had decided that everybody would learn the rhythmic chorales as opposed to the isorhythmic ones. Those were faithful to what Luther and the early chorale composers had in mind. There's a number of quotes in my book where I quote him using these wonderful Germanic metaphors and expressions of how I don't even remember what they were, but they were just so wonderful and colorful about how much better these rhythmic chorales were. So not only that, but in the 1847 hymnal, the first hymnal of the Kirchengesangbuch, the first hymnal of the LCMS, he was very careful to include only Orthodox Lutheran hymns, the great German hymn writers. There's been a lot of research done on that hymnal. People can find that elsewhere. But this has stayed through our hymnal, through LSB. We will find many more German hymns, these great Orthodox Lutheran hymns, and we'll find them either in their rhythmic forms or we'll have both forms available for choice. So I think that's probably his greatest influence on hymnody in the modern LCMS.
Fascinating. Anything else on C.F.W. Walther as church musician you want to share with us as we wrap up our time together today?
Yeah, I think we often hear that the Lutheran church is a singing church. And I don't disagree with that, but it certainly is a singing church going back to Luther. We talked a lot about Luther and teachers being able to teach and to sing. But if you think about it, in 19th century America, and there is plenty of other singing traditions. I mean, we had the Baptists and the Methodists, the Southern Harmony, Lowell Mason and William Bradbury. We had some great American composers who had hymn leaders, congregational singing enliveners. But Walther was different. He set us on a course of being a liturgical church. I think we'll talk about that another time, but a church that used the liturgy. It was faithful to a Lutheran liturgy. And we sang hymns that carefully articulated Lutheran doctrine, and we sang them in a way that they came alive. At least Walther tried to do that. The Addison Seminary, Concordia, Chicago, that heritage of teaching and pedagogy really ensured that we were a singing church, but we were also a liturgical church, and we were different. The LCMS was always kind of its own ecosystem. And I think going back to that quote about Walther not really wanting his students to attend the opera. There's nothing wrong with the opera, but it was better if you stay within the confines of your culture and your tradition. And we think that is a little bit parochial now. It may seem silly. And of course that changed certainly by World War I and World War II. But in the 19th century, that was really the LCMS viewpoint. But as a result of that, the heritage stayed with us. The heritage of good chorale singing the German chorales to the rhythmic tunes. We can thank Walther for that.
Our guest today, Benjamin Kolodziej, church organist and musicologist, author of Portraits, an American Lutheran Sacred Music, 1847-1947, from Concordia Publishing House. Benjamin, thank you so much for spending the time with us today.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.